Welcome to Deeper Walks on the Trail podcast. You are on the trail with father-daughter duo Marcus and Stephanie Warner. I'm Stephanie, and I'll be talking with my father, Dr. Marcus Warner, as we discuss topics that help you stay on the trail to a deeper walk with God.
Here we are in episode 18. We're continuing today with a look at kingdom worldview and theology. Hello, Father.
Hello, daughter. Good to be back with you again.
Always. And what a happy autumn day we're having.
It is. It's a beautiful day. It's the month of October when we're doing this. And I think, beautiful sky, hardly a cloud out there. It's like 60 degrees. And you can start to see a few little color in some of the leaves. It's pretty cool.
I'm so glad that autumn is being autumn.
Yes.
I'm so delighted to dive back into this topic with you, worldview. It informs how we understand and interact with reality. I've heard you quote an Ivy League professor saying, "What we get students to assume to be true is far more powerful than what we have to argue is true." And I think that has universal application outside the classroom. So today, let's start by talking about why grasping the kingdom worldview is so important for Christians in particular.
Yeah, I sometimes look at discipleship as, you know, learning to live in a new culture, right? It's just like a missionary has to go into a cross-cultural context, and not only do they have to teach the Bible and teach Christianity, but they have to do it in a cross-cultural way. Well, in a sense, Jesus came from a different culture. We are brought into that culture with him. And so you could define discipleship as learning to live and act with a kingdom worldview. Like, that's the essence of what Christianity is. So, and you know, part of this was, you know, my dad was an anthropology professor, and worldview was really central to a lot of what he taught. And so that's formed my opinions about this too, and really helped to open my eyes to the importance of this. And the other side of it is that as Christians, if we don't have a kingdom worldview, what worldview are we going to live with, mm-hmm. right? We're just going to be clones of the culture.
At best, it'll be syncretist, like a syncretist worldview. Yeah.
And that's a problem with Christianity all around the world, is that we have our core cultural worldview, and then we slap a little Christianity over the top of it. Well, that's mm-hmm. syncretism, as opposed to actually transforming our worldview to be conformed to the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit about, like, apologetics, how worldview would affect Christian apologetics?
Yeah, when I was your age, they used to call it presuppositionalism, right? So they got a shorter word now. It's worldview approach to apologetics. But the idea is that you can look at the exact same evidence, and it means totally different things to you, depending on the filter that you're using, right, when you look at it. So if I look at... I'll give you an example. There were some researchers at a university in Arizona who were doing some studies on the power of the mind, right? So they had a worldview that said there are no spirits. There is no, you know, Christianity is not true. Everything that happens in this world is physical and material and energy, and that they believe that the mind could generate energy. So they were doing a classic occult parlor thing of levitating, you know, trying to make a table levitate. Well, in the middle of their session, it levitated. Not only did it levitate, it started going around the room, and they were like chasing this table, right, around the room. And yet that experience was not enough to convince them that spirits are real. They were convinced that that was just the power of their mind doing this, and that it was out of control. We even see this in the life of Jesus, where he did miracles, right? He taught people things. They experienced it, they saw it, but their worldview was so locked in that what they interpreted from what they saw Jesus doing did not change their lives. So worldview is that much power. It's the filter through which we look at everything in life. Mm-hmm. So apologetics-wise, this is why it is often hard to even have a conversation with some people about things related to apologetics, because our worldviews are so different that our words don't mean the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, even just defining terms can get hairy, because you have to have the same worldview, or at least understand each other's worldview.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in talking about a kingdom worldview and theology, we look at questions like, how do I look at God? How do I look at myself? Where have I been? Where am I going? That sort of thing. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, those are the classic questions of theology, right? Yeah. Somebody put it to me this way. Biblical theology, systematic theology, they're different in this way. Biblical theology is me studying the Bible and trying to organize what it says into categories. Systematic theology is where the world asks us questions and we try to give them biblical answers. So systematic, I taught systematic theology right back in my 20s. And it was just one of those God things that he dropped in my lap. So, but it was the opportunity to realize that as systematics, what you're doing is somebody asks you a question and then says, what does the Bible have to say about this? Or what would be a biblical perspective on this? And then you go through and you try to systematize everything that the Bible has to say about a particular topic. Well, that's, you know, that's huge because we all have questions about life and we want to know, is there a biblical way to look at this? Is there a kingdom way to look at this? And if we don't get those things clear in our minds, we're just going to default to what everybody in our world does. And so if we are, and it tends to be more our subculture than our larger culture. And that is whatever our people do that we most identify with, that tends to be what we default to. So.
Yeah. When I think of Grandpa Warner being a teacher, yeah. I think of him teaching worldview. And we've already talked about him a little bit in a prior episode, but I would love to give him more space in this episode. I have some thoughts, but do you want to?
Well, what do you remember? I mean, you know, we were very different ages. We had a very different relationship with him when we were experiencing that. But yeah, I mean, he was famous for his worldview teaching. In fact, I know Wycliffe had him come in and they used to have their missionaries go through his worldview training. And yeah, it's pretty good stuff. So
yeah, I mean, I remember the apple okay. and the core. Like, I don't know if I could just explain it off the top of my head. I don't have your brain, but I remember the apple, and I especially just remember him talking about spiritual warfare and worldview. I thought that was like, that's, mm-hmm. that was what made him especially unique in his teaching on that.
One of the things that, my dad taught on warfare worldview, that was kind of his core topic. And the, in talking about warfare worldview, he liked to explain the difference between a Christian perspective on spiritual warfare and like animism. Mm-hmm. And the way he would explain it is animism is like believes that there is an impersonal power in the universe. Okay, you can think of the Force in Star Wars, right? But this is the most pervasive worldview in every culture on Earth. And it's the idea that there is a spiritual force or spiritual power at work. And this power is neither good nor evil. So it is simply powerful. So he likens it to electricity. He's like, electricity can heat up our house. It can light up the room. It can also kill us, right? So is electricity evil when it kills us and good when it's lighting up, or is it just neutral? And that's the idea. Most people in the world who live with an animistic worldview believe that that this power is just neutral. They also believe it can be controlled. And so they look at shaman, witch doctors, right, as those, it's sort of like electricians, right? They're the people who are specialists on how to manipulate this power to get it to do what you want it to do. Now, such people also believe in spiritual beings. They just don't believe that all power is personal. Whereas a kingdom worldview, a biblical worldview, teaches that all power is ultimately personal. And this is huge because, you know, we see it today in psychology and medicine, in our universities, and more in the United States and around the world, is this acceptance of what used to be an occult worldview that sees the if you can use it for good, then it must be good. Instead of understanding that underneath all this, there is the biblical worldview says there's only God power and demonic power, right? And so there's not a neutral power that can just be manipulated. So his teaching on worldview tended to focus on things like this. Mm-hmm. And he loved to particularly distinguish animism from a biblical perspective on spirituality.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he had direct relation to that because of his time in Africa.
Right. Right. Yeah. He was he and my mom were missionaries in Sierra Leone. Mm-hmm. So they, and he tells me too, they were completely unprepared for it. Right. They didn't get the kind of training.
Which is why he had a passion for giving people training.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Since I brought it up, do you want to explain the apple?
Sure.
We don't leave people hanging. What is the apple?
Yeah, yeah. So the apple idea is that if I were an alien, I'm going to mix metaphors here, but if I were an alien coming to the world and trying to figure out what's going on, he said it's a little bit like a missionary coming into a culture and trying to figure out what the world is going on. And so when my parents came to Sierra Leone, they had to figure out culture. So apple is a way of understanding, well, what's going on in the culture. So you got the first thing you run into is the outer layer of the culture. It's the observable behaviors and institutions, things like this. For example, architecture is often different in various parts of the world, not just because of what's available for making it, but because it expresses the values of what is important. And so there was a time, for instance, in medieval Europe where you had, you know, the cathedrals and castles were the dominant architectural things because the church and the king were the two great institutions of the culture. Well, today, you know, what dominates our landscapes, you know,
skyscrapers.
Yeah, financial institutions for the most part, because what we value is money. And so that's dwarfs everything else that's going on. So the outer skin of the apple is what is readily observable, habits and traits and customs and things like this. But underneath that is like the fleshy part of the apple are the values. And that's kind of the idea that our values drive what how we behave, what we create, and the things that we see on the other level. And then the core of the apple that drives our values is our worldview. And so that was the idea that he taught, that at the core of every culture is its worldview, and the worldview drives its values, and the values drives its behavior. So that was the apple analogy.
And would you add anything to that now, or do any changes? Or
yeah, the only thing I would add to it, I think, is that deeper even than worldview is belonging. So when it comes to belonging and why I would add belonging, I think of my parents' experience in tribal Africa. And one of the things that became apparent was that what was core to that culture was who their people were. In other words, they looked around and they had an extended family system in which your second cousin was called brother or sister. Right. We in America, we don't even know our first cousins and second, let alone our second cousins in many cases. But in their culture, you were actually responsible for their debt. And so you stayed engaged in their lives to make sure they didn't get too far off track because you were going to, you know, you had some kind of responsibility there. But their whole way of looking at it began with the idea that there is because these are my people, then everything flows out of that, which is, well, what do my people believe? Right. What do my people think is the way life works? And then what do my people value? And then how do my people behave? And how do we do this? So that's the only other thing I would add to it is this idea that belonging is often a deeper motivation even than our worldview. And we are predisposed to adapt the world to, I'm sorry, we're predisposed to adopt the worldview of the people to whom we feel most belonging.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And you can see that just at work in modern culture and the political climate and
there's no question about it. It's like, you know, if I'm surrounded by a people group and I want to belong to that people group, it's very difficult to oppose their worldview and oppose their value system because they're not going to want you to, you're not going to feel like you belong. Mm-hmm. And that motivation to belong is a very powerful force that drives us toward particular worldviews. And it can be used for that force can be used for good or for evil, right? Mm-hmm. So in the church, what's supposed to happen is there is actually supposed to be this belonging energy that drives us collectively to promote a biblical worldview and biblical values and to make that the norm in our churches. So, you know, Paul talks about that regularly.
Can you give us some practical ways in which Christians can cultivate our worldview, aside from like the three pillars we're going to go into later, but just some things that we could be on guard for, or things that we should be, you know, have on our radar? Like,
yeah, well, you know, part of it is knowing the worldview of your culture so you can recognize when it's creeping into your own. And some of it is this is why we study theology, right? Part of this is to make sure that I have a clear theological foundation to the way that I think. I love the way we're going to talk about Joseph Stone, I think, in our next session. But I remember him saying that he thinks theologically, which means that he is always thinking, what is the Christian way of looking at this? And rather than worldview, what he liked was my conception of life. And the analogy he gave was, if I've got a car and my conception of the car is that it runs on diesel, but it actually runs on unleaded gasoline, I can do major damage to that car because my conception of it is wrong. In the same way, my worldview is not in sync with reality, right? I can do major damage. So how I promote this are all the core things. And that is, I listen to podcasts like this, right? I study my Bible. I begin to think theologically about things in life a little bit more. And I hang out with people who help me.
Yeah. I see it like, also, in counseling terms, we talk about fruit picking and versus mm-hmm. getting at the roots. And I think a lot of times Christian worldview, overtly at least, has tended to be fruit picking, like, and that has turned it legalistic or even opposite of legalistic. But, you know, people will fruit pick instead of understanding why do I believe and how do I apply that why to everything in life.
That makes sense. Yeah, because we live in a buffet culture, right? Postmodernism is the, you know, like, pick a little bit of everything and bring it together and create your own worldview, and that's okay, even if it's completely illogical. So that's what we're trying to avoid. And so sometimes just knowing what cultural tendencies are, you recognize them. I also know is that the more that I read the Bible and the more that I am in the Bible, the more I tend to see the stories of my life in terms of the stories of the Bible. Mm-hmm. So just like mythology teaches worldview to a culture, so the stories of the Bible teach us a worldview. And, you know, when we read stories like Balaam and his donkey, it affects our worldview, right? when we read stories, you know, about the angel of the Lord killing 185,000 Assyrian soldiers, right? It affects our worldview. When we see David, you know, confronting an angel with on the Temple Mount, what was to become the Temple Mount, you know, it affects our worldview. And so and I can go on and on and on, right? The Bible presents a world in which spirits are very active in our lives. Whereas in most American and Western Christians, I think the spiritual realm has become what I call the attic, right, of the house. And that is, we know it exists, we know it's real, but we kind of stuff the things up there and forget about it because we don't see any practical application to the way we live our everyday lives. It's not functional. And that's what we're really trying to change.
So next episode, we'll be looking more at the three pillars of a kingdom worldview. But for now, any final thoughts on theology?
So one of the reasons we're going to be talking about the three pillars of a kingdom worldview is that to begin thinking theologically, you have to have your foundation set. Where do we start? And so that's what the three pillars are going to be about. Where do we start in putting together a biblical worldview? And so I'm looking forward to this. We're going to introduce them next week, and then we're going to take a deeper dive into each one of them in the weeks to come.
Huzzah! Well, thank you, Father, and thank you all for joining us on the trail today. If you want to keep going deeper with us on your walk with God, please subscribe to the Deeper Walk podcast and share with your friends. You can find more at our website, deeperwalkinternational.org. Thanks again. We'll see you back next week.